Welcome once again to Word on the Hills, with me, Felicity Sidnell-Reed, my co-hosts Gwyn Sheltimer, and our guests this week, Hope Bergeron and Maggie Harper. Usually, each week, we visit with a local author or other artists and get an introduction to their work, a glimpse into their lives, find out if we can what prompts them to write, and give them an opportunity to read from their work. Today, we are delighted to welcome the winners of the recent Spirit of the Hills Writing Contest. Their winning entries have just been published in Hill Spirits 3, released by Blue Denim Press at the Spirit of the Hills Festival of the Arts on November 3rd and 4th. Our first guest is Hope Bergeron, winner of the prose competition. Welcome, Hope.
I'm happy to be here.
Hope Bergeron started her career as a graphic artist, designing forms for a bank, and later she did similar work at the Globe and Mail and for Eaton's and Sears. Unfortunately, her kind of job became less available as computers took over so much design work. Then Hope suffered a series of illnesses and is now legally blind. She wrote when she was between jobs and then took early retirement to look after her parents who were ill. She's published 4 articles in the Globe and Mail's Facts and Arguments column, 1 piece in Travel Tales in the Toronto Sun called Picnic in Red Square, which won her a trip to Montreal, and she has written and published other travel articles. She's also written many other humorous columns and stories for children, which remain unpublished at the moment. So, tell us a little about your travel article in the Star, Hope.
I went to Penglinton, Baffin Island, which is an art community. They are noted for tapestries of Inuit life, and they also do stone carving, bone carving, antler carving, women's traditional handwork like knitting and felt work. And we were there to sketch and draw on the landscape, took a lot of photographs. And when I came back, I compiled all that together in a story of a northern adventure, a northern artistic adventure. I sent it to the Star with my photographs, and very happily they published it.
Well, it was obviously an exciting trip. You must have had lots to tell your audience.
It's a wonderful place. There's an interpretive whaling station and a museum, and the elders will tell you all about traditional life. Mm-hmm. And people think there's nothing in the north, but there is a tremendous amount of art and traditional life up there.
So you take a special, rather quirky view of life in your writing. What's your motivation here?
There's a lot of trouble in the world, so I kind of sweat the small stuff. There's a lot of funny stuff that can happen anywhere. For example, one time I had to go for a head scan, and before they shot the dye into me, I had to sign a release form, of which one side effect was death.
Well, I'm glad you didn't suffer from that.
No. But I write about those funny little things. Perhaps the third little pig or the fourth little pig should have used fruitcake to build his house and would have scared the big bad wolf away. Just funny little things like that occurred to me. Mm. If I went to Mars, that would be great because I'd only have to do my income tax every 2 years as they're on a 2-year cycle. And just funny little things like that occur to me, and I can write a piece about it.
Yes. So you love writing, and I think you must love reading. Are you still able to read books themselves, or how have you replaced reading books?
I have become an audiophile. In the world of talking books, it's like being in a great play happening around you. I think I've listened to every talking book in the library, and I love radio. I listen to a lot of old radio, like Jack Benny, Burns and Allen, Fibber McGee. It's just so wonderful to have something happening all around you. Talking books are wonderful. You get so much more out of a talking book, listening to something being played out around you. And there are also awards for people that read well, the Audies.
Yes, I know many people who love audiobooks and take them always when they're driving.
Or doing housework.
Yes, I guess you can do more or less anything when you're listening. Yeah. Your winning piece of memoir is about your large family of cousins and your time at the lake with them in the 60s. What was the inspiration for that piece?
Well, one of my cousins died, and it's that strange feeling you get, where has the time gone? And this year we're looking at Canada 150, and when we were all kids, it was around centennial year. So we have that looking back at Canada 100, as we're reminded by Canada 150, and then we're wondering, where did the time go? And all the funny things we did and all the quirky things we did. So once you get in that funeral home, the memories start to tumble and they just fall out. And one person says this and it twigs another person to say this. And you just remember and remember.
So what was the gift? The gift of life? Or
no, the gift is the land we are on, Canada, the promised land, my dad called it, and roots. And family, that security of roots and family.
Yes. Okay, so I hope you're now going to read to us from the gift.
I am going to read the beginning. The gift. We buried the first of us in June. It had been a rainy spring, but we were given a breezy, sun-splashed day for the funeral. Time passed, slipping like sand through our fingers. We buried our grandparents and parents in turn. With disbelief, it was now one of us, the kids. Originally 9 kids, forever young, we were my sister Diane, the oldest, our cousins Rick, Glenna, and Brent before me. I was followed by cousins Deb and Bruce. Finally, baby brothers Paul and David arrived, a gaggle of brothers, sisters, and cousins spanning 11 years. Collectively, we were average 60 years of age. Where had the years gone? We all for one wondered. Bound by childhood loyalty, we escorted Brent to rest. Nicknamed Hippie, remember? His brown curls tumbled to his shoulders. Back in the day, that was the style, remember? We were from Toronto, but thrived on the south shore of Rice Lake. Our parents built cottages from scratch. During the decades, either side of centennial year, 1967, from Easter to Thanksgiving, we lived through the lake. We zombied through dull Toronto winters until the glorious free-range run of summer. Remember, a place to stand? We were in a funeral home, still standing together. What a piece of land our parents bought. Rocks, scrub, cedar, more rocks. It pitched straight down from the dirt road to the water. Who'd want this scrabble? Us. It became our reason to be, not knowing impossible. We willingly lost our hearts. Our elders were tradesmen from lumbering. We kids, journeymen, ready for adventure. Bucksaw, chainsaw, bonfire. We cleared our pitch. We moved rocks and more rocks. Chain block, block and tackle, or come along. We pulled stumps and big rocks. What's a moraine? We all cussed rocks. Foundations established, the back cottage walls hit the hill. The front walls, supported by pillars, trusses, beams, shingles, stucco. Our elders moved past the Depression, past the war, into the space age. We kids fell in with can-do attitude. At the funeral, we were ignited by memories, still kids at heart. Remember taking building supplies up on the truck? No room in the cab. We rode the 401 in the truck bed with the stuff. Sit down, behave, Dad ordered. If you fall out, I can make another kid. Knotty pine, mismatched lino tiles, secondhand furniture, beans and wieners, French fries, hot dogs, peanut butter, white bread, grandma's brown sugar fudge. Call the kids to lick the pot. We stocked firewood and fetched tools. We made cement, learning the difference between too wet and too short. The hill was terraced into gardens, rocks corralled into retaining walls. 1967 blazed a stylized maple leaf logo celebrating Canada's centennial. Dad cut a stamp out of wood, proudly, permanently impressing the symbol into the wet cement of multiple sidewalks. Grandpa painted the logo's Barber green, then painted fence rails, then porch chairs, then happily ran out of this free paint he got from work. Grandpa'd give you the coins in his pocket if you could correctly guess how much. Never. Other relatives came, more cottage kids, farm kids, the work, the play, the people, reeled together like a fiddler's jig. All kids were good for a game, baseball in the gravel pit, badminton, or bikes. There was a punt, a motorboat, and a cabin cruiser. It could go 60 for skiing. Remember? Let's go. Where? Everywhere. Muskie Bay for a Mountain Dew? Boat? Walk? Let's cut through the forest. We can go to the island later. Need gas. Kids congregated at the roadside swings. We played dinky cars in the dirt. Barbie might arrive, wrapped in designer fashion scraps, salvaged from the rag bag. Remember when Barbie's head popped off? She rocked the season, headless, her bouffanted cranium, later found where it rolled down the hill. Brent ironed my Barbie clothes. How the boys teased him. In later years, he'd laugh, "Remember, I iron your doll clothes?" Definitely and forever.
Thank you, Hope. Thank you. You read that so beautifully.
Oh.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Everybody will want to finish the story now.
So I hope they would like to read the rest of the story in the book and everyone else's work as well.
Yes, I hope so too.
Thank
and
you.
I'm sure they will.
Thank you.
We've been talking to Hope Bergeron, winner of the prose contests run by Spirit of the Hills this summer. Now we'll take a short break.